Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
All right, welcome to the show. I'm Brett Amundson, and for the next hour, we're going to talk hunting and fishing. Specifically, we'll talk whitetails with Tyler Scott, who every year seems to show up on my Facebook feed with another giant buck. He actually traveled to Iowa this year, and we're going to find out about his Iowa trip, and we'll find out what he does for land management, and just kind of get an update on where we are with the rut and what the deer are doing these days. We'll go in the truck with Tony Crotty for a waterfowl migration report, because right now, everything is happening with this colder weather. Birds are on the move. Pheasants are bundling up. Fish are biting. People are getting excited about ice fishing. Some people are ice fishing already. And we'll kind of talk about hard water. The hard water season apparently is upon us. We'll see if the warmer temperatures in the forecast keep it that way or not. And, of course, we'll talk about Lake of the Woods. Right away, to start off the show here with Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods. Joe, all of a sudden, winter is here.
You know, it came up pretty darn quick. And, man, I'll tell you, it's been kind of fun watching the water temperatures drop. And, of course, right off the bat, the back bays start icing up. And some of the locals who are very, very careful will go out and check the ice. Rivers freezing up. Northwest angles getting locked up. I mean, it won't be long. I saw a post this morning, and I don't recommend anybody going on the ice yet. I'll make that clear. Has to be safety first. You got to know what you're doing. But somebody did walk out on an area of the Rainy River where there's not a lot of current, and there was 4.5 inches.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's happening pretty darn quick. And I know the lake is showing the ice on it. It's been kind of windy. So the ice has, it's kind of like floating ice. It's like in chunks, just kind of going with the waves and stuff. And, you know, with the single digits we've been having at night up at Lake of the Woods here, you know, it won't be long. We get a calm night, it's going to lock. And so we're getting closer. And, you know, Brett, we normally would bring fish houses out around, you know, on average around December 10th or something. Heck, this year it could be that right away, early December, we got houses out. Time will tell, you know, and one thing I say, no matter what, you know, safety first, and at least when you come to Lake of the Woods, lean on the resorts, lean on the ice guides, because they're not going to let you get out into a bad area. The other thing I always say is that, you know, when you're going out in that early ice, stay on the marked trails. Those trails are marked for a reason. It's because in some cases, well, they've certainly checked the ice on those trails. They know that ice is good ice. They've also, in many cases, done things to the ice. You don't always know it, but a lot of times they've put pumps in and pumped water onto that area of ice to make it smoother and to build the ice up in that area. I mean, there's different things that they do behind the scenes that make it safe for customers. So please stay on the trails, especially early ice.
Talking with Joe Henry here about Lake of the Woods on Sporting Journal Radio. Joe, you talked about leaning on the resorts and the ice guides out there, and I'm a firm believer in that too. And then I'm also a firm believer, and if you do, if one of those resorts or guides helps you out, help them out. Either use them, patronize their business, you know, go in there, whatever, or tip them. Because those guides, I'm sure they were looking forward to having a little bit of a break here between the summer and the winter. And their break just got a lot shorter.
It's so true. It's so true. This is a time where they can at least take a deep breath. And you know what? With early ice, that deep breath is much shorter. And you're right. You know, Brett, the guys and gals, and there are some gals who work the ice too. The guys and gals who go out there. I remember writing an article once about the ice warriors of Lake of the Woods. And, you know, there is so much that goes on behind the scenes, so much hard work that makes ice fishing so much easier and more enjoyable in Lake of the Woods, whether it's the plowed roads. You know, Brett, there's times where, you know, if we get wind and that ice forms up against shore, that ice will stack and it's really bumpy. They'll drive back and forth with huge steel grids to knock the ridges off those ice chunks. They'll pump water on to make it smoother. Now, they're out there before light while people are still sleeping, checking the ice conditions on their own roads, making sure that no, you know, cracks or ice upheavals or anything has happened. I mean, there really is a lot of hard work that goes on behind the scenes. And these people work darn hard and they don't make a ton of money. And I'm with you. I mean, anywhere I go, if there's a guy that does that extra bit for me, I'm going to certainly try to take care of him if I can.
I remember the first time I went up in the winter, Joe, onto Lake of the Woods, and we were riding. I can't remember if we were in a bomber or one of the vans on tracks. We were coming out with Ballards and we were going out, and it was cold. It was blowing 30 miles an hour. The temperatures were below zero. It was just brutal out there. Of course, we were nice and warm in that bomber riding out there. But all of a sudden we stopped, and we had a caravan of five or six rigs that were going out. And we stopped for a minute and trying to look out the window. And finally I hopped out. And I walked up to the front of the line and I was talking to the guys. Well, there was a pressure ridge that had built up overnight, and it was a good 4 or 5 feet in the air. And they're out there with chainsaws having to cut this thing down, you know, so we could get through. I'd never seen anything like it before in my life. These guys out in the middle of a lake, below zero, 30 mile an hour winds, and they're cutting ice with a chainsaw so we can drive through it. It was insane. And those guys earned their money that day for sure.
Yeah, they do most days. I'll tell you, it's they deal with a lot of different kind of conditions, everything from whiteouts to just everything. And you know what they do earn their money. They're there to make sure that not only things are easier for you, but they're there to make things safe. And you just gotta, you know, it's amazing what they do behind the scenes. But there's even things like on Pine Island early in the year, some of those first resorts will get up to Pine Island, which is, you know, on that south shore of Lake of the Woods by 4 Mile Bay. And what they'll do is they'll actually spray water on the sand to make the sand hard, so that when you drive over pine, it's a good drive and you don't get stuck in the sand. I mean, there's so many little things. Heck, there's a snowmobile trail that goes all the way across the lake to the angle and back to Arneson's Rocky Point and across the south shore. And you know, the people that mark that trail, they go out on snowmobiles and they drill holes and put in these black markers with reflective tape on the top of them. And I mean, just there's so many things that go on. It's just amazing.
Talking with Joe Henry up at Lake of the Woods here on Sporting Journal Radio. Everybody's getting excited about the hard water season because it's apparently here, or at least the beginning of it is here. I know we had some down here in western Minnesota. We had like most of Lac Parle had at least had a skim of ice over it. And I know with the winds that we got, some of it opened back up. So I know some conditions are changing. And Joe, we were over in South Dakota, eastern side of South Dakota, waterfowl hunting early in the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And we got over there, we drove over there Sunday, and there was definitely some ice on some of the ponds. And it got so cold Sunday night. Monday morning, we got up and pretty much every smaller body of water was completely frozen over. It was just some of the big lakes that were still open. And so on Tuesday, then we went around to some of the small ponds and we were kind of kicking them open to see how much ice was there, seeing if we could create a small water hole. And there was 2 inches of ice already on some of those ponds. And we could not believe how fast we were making ice.
You can make ice fast. I know when ice is thin, I mean, you can make, you know, a good 2-3 inches, I think, a day if it's real, real cold out, you know, thin ice. And of course, as that ice gets thicker, it doesn't make it as fast because, you have to get that cold penetrated through more ice in order to get to the water to freeze it. And, but yeah, no, it can go fast. And that's what we're hoping for. You know, you always hope that the ice freezes smooth. You hope that the ice, it freezes in a way that the lake wasn't real, real rough. And then you have dirty water. I mean, you know, we've had years where for the first 2 miles, it's built up on top of each other and it's real rough and it's still doable, but man, Mother Nature can certainly make life easier than having that going on.
Yeah, and it was colder in South Dakota than it was over here, and I know here in western Minnesota we got mid-40s forecasted for the next week. So, you know, as a waterfowl guy, I'm kind of happy about that because we got a lot of ducks and geese around, and I'm hoping that they stick around at least for another week or a couple of weeks, hopefully. But I know a lot of my guys, I don't know how many snaps I got on Snapchat from people that were showing them getting their, plugging their electronics in, getting them charged up, getting their portables ready, organizing all their tackle boxes and things like that, because they're definitely excited for it. And, you know, Joe, one of the things we should talk about too is it's not just about catching fish. We were talking about this off the air just a little bit. It's about kind of the adventure. And that was like our trip to South Dakota. You know, we didn't shoot a ton of birds, but it was a lot of fun. It was the adventure of getting a group of guys together and spending time on the road and camping when it's literally, you know, 10 degrees outside and you're outside camping to shoot a duck, you know, to shoot the things we do to shoot ducks and geese. And that's one of the fun things too about taking these winter ice fishing trips. And I want to talk about the adventure of going up to Lake of the Woods. We're going to take a quick break. We'll talk about Lake of the Woods ice fishing, and we'll talk about some of the tips, especially early in the year, what you can do to increase your success ice fishing and making plans to go up to Lake of the Woods. Some more with Joe Henry on the way. We'll talk about that waterfall migration with Tony Crotty from Mid-Migration Outfitters, and we got Tyler Scott coming up, too, to give us an update on what the whitetails are doing right now, because holy smokes, have I been seeing some big deer getting shot in Minnesota and the states around us too. I hadn't seen a lot of big deer during the bow season, and I was kind of surprised about that. But boy, are Minnesota hunters making up for it now. All of that coming up here on Sporting Journal Radio. Hey, it's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman. And if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. We've got pictures, videos, more information about what you need to bring and what the rates are. Visit midmigrationoutfitters.com. Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com. Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. We're back, Sporting Journal Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for listening across the Sporting Journal Radio Network. On demand at sportingjournalradio.com or subscribable and podcastable in your iTunes. Coming up, we'll talk whitetails with Tyler Scott. We've got a waterfall migration update with Tony Crotty from Mid-Migration Outfitters. And Joe Henry is joining us right now from Lake of the Woods. And Joe, you know, we talked about a little bit before the break, but there are people. I saw a picture of a guy in a portable out in North Dakota. I mean, some of these guys are crazy when it comes to early ice fishing, and I like to have definitely a good couple inches underneath me before I get out there. But we're making ice pretty fast, aren't we?
It's coming quick. Yep, and it'll be real quick here. We're going to be on the water, or on the ice, I should say, and on the frozen water. And you know, it's interesting too. You know, I always say safety first, you know, so when you're going out there, make sure you take the precautions early ice. Yeah. Bring a pair of picks with you, bring a rope, make sure you're fishing with a partner. You know, if you're walking on thin ice conditions, have that, chisel and every time you take a step, hit that chisel to make sure it doesn't go through. I mean, you know, I'm not one to go out on ice that thin. There are people that do it. A lot of people that do it. And I just say, if you're going to go out there, and even if you don't think the ice is that thin early in the seasons, especially, take the precautions, carry the picks, carry the rope, go with a partner. You know, if you're going to be using a snowmobile or an ATV, boy, I tell you, those nebulous that you can strap on there. And if something goes wrong, you pull that cord and it turns into a raft that'll get you out of the water. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do, but you know, ice fishing, it has to be safety first. Now, once we got that covered, tell you what, Brett, that first ice is some of the best fish of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like risk for reward. The very first ice and the very last ice can be some of the best fishing. I can tell you this right now, as we speak, there have been people going out fishing that South Shore Lake of the Woods just recently, and there are tens of thousands of walleyes and saugers stacked up along the South Shore. We've certainly been catching them up at the angle, and those are the exact places that we fish early ice. So anglers that get out there in December are going to have some darn good fishing.
So it's been early ice, making good ice early this year. On an average year, how thick does the ice get in spots on Lake of the Woods?
Oh, man, heck. We've had it before where, I mean, it gets over 3 feet thick. And we've had it before where, you know, one extension on your ice auger doesn't do it. You have to put two extensions on. And for some of our shorter ice guides, they literally have to stand on a bench in order to start a cutting official. So, I mean, they got their arms way up in the air, you know, trying to get this thing rolling. And, you know, once you get the motor down by your chest, you can get some more leverage on it. But Oh no, we get darn thick ice up there. You know, one thing I'll say about Lake of the Woods is that we're so far north that, you know, when the rest of the region struggles with warmer temps and the ice is marginal, you know, we still have that good ice. And we're one of the first to get it. We certainly are one of the last to keep it because we're so far north. And not only that, because of that, our season, our walleye season and pike season goes all the way through March. You can have permanent fish houses on Lake of the Woods through the month of March. So we get that whole extra month in the back end. And normally in the front end, we get an extra, maybe 2 to 3 weeks.
So, I mean, do you have any snow up there yet?
So we do have snow, and it's kind of cool that the snow didn't go on top of the ice so that when that ice does lock up the lake, you know, hopefully we'll have bare ice for a while because that makes the best ice.
That's what I was wondering. So you've gotten some snow, but maybe what, the wind has kept it off the ice?
Yeah, and the wind's kept it off the ice, and on the main lake it hasn't locked up yet. You know, we do have some ice up at the northwest angle, but down on the main lake there's just a little bit of shoreline ice so far. Okay. So yeah, we're actually setting up real nice.
Joe Henry, our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about Lake of the Woods and freezing up and where the ice is at and where the fish are at. And you got guys out there fishing that south shore. What are some of the tips you can give to people if they're heading out for early ice? What do you like to do?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, right off the bat, when you're fishing anywhere in Lake of the Woods or, you know, really for that matter, Minnesota, you know, you want to use the 1-2 punch. And when I say the 1-2 punch, it's a jigging line in one hole and a dead stick in the other hole. And the whole idea there is that, you know, you'll be jigging perhaps a jigging spoon or a jigging wrap or something. And that's going to get your more active fish. And if the fish aren't active that day, if nothing else, that jigging line will oftentimes attract them and pull them in. And then your second line oftentimes will be a live minnow on either a plain hook or an ice jig, like a walleye ice jig of some type. And, you know, that attracts the more docile fish, the fish, those walleyes and saugers that are in a neutral mode. So, you know, you'll get some fish fly in and after your jigging line and whack that. And in other cases, you know, your bobber line might be going all day long. And I say bobber line because most people use a bobber, Brett, but, you know, a lot of the guides will actually take, and instead of using a bobber, they'll take and they'll set the depth just by, you know, knowing where the bottom is and having it 6 inches to a foot off, and they'll set their rod on a bucket. On a 5 gallon pail, and then they'll watch that tip. If they got a flexible tip on that rod, and they actually, it's a little bit more sensitive. A lot of times those walleyes, they'll take and you watch that rod tip and you maybe see that minnow moving that tip just a little bit. And all of a sudden that rod tip just goes down just a little bit, maybe an inch. That's a walleye sucking on it. You grab that rod tip, you just lift it up real slow, feel that weight and set the hook. You'll get extra fish that way that maybe you wouldn't have gotten if it's on a bobber line.
Okay, you're getting me excited about ice fishing, Joe.
I tell you what, and you know, the other thing too is, if for people that don't use electronics, oh my goodness, using a good Vexilar or whatever your favorite electronics are, man, that makes all the difference. You have to, man. First off, it's good to know there's fish down there. Secondly, are the fish coming through in the bottom? Are they coming through suspended? Thirdly, how are the fish reacting to your presentation? You know, if you're doing the normal jig, let it sit, jig, let it sit, and they're not reacting to it, now you pound the bottom and then stir up that mud. Then you start teasing them up and reeling your line up while you're shaking it and getting them chasing that lure up in the water column. You know, maybe you switch colors. Maybe you switch sizes. Maybe you go from a real active mode in your jigging to a very, very docile mode. We just shake a little bit and let it sit in the strike zone. So, you know, that tells you how the fish are reacting that day or maybe even that hour. But it really helps put more fish in the bucket. And, Brett, you know this, it's fun.
Yeah,
I mean it is.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like playing a video game sometimes. And to me, I mean, that you're right. It's the chase, watching that red line pot coming up and coming down and chasing your jig up and down like that. That to me is so much of it. You know, it's so much fun to try to fool that fish. You know, when you're just fishing blind, it's like you're getting lucky basically. Or the old guys will be like, no, you're right. You know, jig, and hold it still, whatever, twitch it and hold it still. But when you can watch to see what the fish is doing. And you go, oh, he's coming up, but he won't hit it. You drop it back down a little bit, bring it out. You know, he can play with the fish a little bit. I think that's great.
Well, and I'll tell you the other thing. One of the techniques I think is really effective for catching those walleyes that don't whack you right away is, you know, you let's say you're using a jigging spoon with a minnow head. You know, you shake that thing, And then what you do is you shake it, and then you reel, and you get it going up in the water column. It's like it's like a bait fish trying to escape up. And I think that's pretty natural in the real world. And, you know, you see that red line starting to rise. When that red line rises towards your presentation, don't stop. Keep reeling. Keep it going. And there's times where I'll be talking to people in the fish house. He's 5 feet off. He's 6 feet off. He's 7 feet off. He's 8 feet off. Fish, you know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when they hit you, when they're flying up, when they make that decision to eat, they fly straight up and grab that thing. So it pushes your line in the air. You get slack. I'll tell you the other thing about that is when you're doing that, I used to use my rod tip and lift my rod tip up. But what would happen is my arms would be straight up in the air and that fish would hit. I'd have nothing left to set the hook, or my rod would hit the top of the fish house.
Yeah.
What I do now is I use my reel and I reel that up so that my arms are always near my chest. So if I got to set that hook, boy, I always got some hook setting ability, you know?
Okay, I am really starting to get excited about ice fishing. Joe, I wasn't ready there. I wasn't ready yet because there's so many ducks and geese around. I still have to shoot my deer, but I'll tell you what, this is definitely getting me excited for ice fishing. It's here earlier this year. We're talking to Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods, and the adventure is part of it. Yeah, catching fish is great, and obviously going to a walleye factory like Lake of the Woods, you're going to catch some fish. But just going and spending a couple of days with your friends up there, that's kind of what it's all about, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, one thing I got to say is that, you know, when we talk about ice fishing, Brett, you and I are pretty, you know, we're into it. But, you know, there's a lot of people that are very, very average anglers. They don't fish very often. Maybe they don't have the equipment. I'll tell you, one of the cool things I think about Lake of the Woods is that, you know, many of our resorts offer the full service. So basically, even if you don't ice fish, you could come up with your husband or your wife, loved ones, family, friends, whatever. You wouldn't have to fish at all. You come up, you eat a nice breakfast in the morning at the resort. You jump into heated ice transportation. They take you out to a fish house. The holes are drilled. It's on the fish. It's 70 degrees. You get in there. They kind of give you an idea of how to fish these fish. They provide the bait for you. You whack fish all day long. At about 4:30, they pick up you and your bucket of fish. They bring you back into happy hour, and they even clean your fish for you. Mm. I mean, it makes it so so doable for people who are intimidated by the sport of ice fishing because maybe they've never done it or don't have the equipment. And that's a great thing is you get people into fishing that don't do it very often. I think that's really cool. Man, the smiles we see, the adventure, the wintertime adventure that people can experience out on a big frozen lake. It's pretty neat.
It's great. Well, I'm excited about it. We're going to take a snowmobiling and ice fishing trip to Lake of the Woods this year, Joe. And if anybody else wants to plan a trip to Lake of the Woods, where can they find out more information?
Yeah, you know, all of our resorts and everything are on our website. It's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
That time of the year is here. Thank you very much, Joe. We got Tyler Scott coming up. We'll talk whitetails, and we'll also go in the truck with Tony Crony from Mid-Migration Outfitters to talk about a waterfowl migration report, because right now, everything is happening. It's just trying to decide what you want to do.
Your hands start shaking, your heart gets to pumping, your knees get to knocking, and your mind starts racing. It's a feeling like you never felt before.
Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, anglers! Looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the northwest angle. Here you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
From Mid-Migration Outfitters here on Sporting Journal Radio. Tony, we have had a couple interesting days here this week chasing waterfowl.
Yeah, we ran into some weather out in South Dakota, kind of got our butts kicked a little bit, but, you know, that's how the game goes. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Yeah, South Dakota, I mean, that's for a whole nother discussion. Maybe we'll get into that here in a little bit here on the show. But let's just talk about the weather for a minute, because the migration, people talk about weather events that push birds down. We obviously had that. This was a pretty heavy-duty weather event because it started freezing stuff up in the Dakotas. You know, it was pushing birds out of Canada. It was freezing stuff up in the Dakotas. South Dakota, it froze a lot up too, which those birds will move through pretty quick when that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. When the temps drop and the birds start moving, you know, they need a place to eat and need a place to roost on water. And when stuff starts freezing up, it really makes birds push through quick. And, you know, the migration goes basically full swing depending on weather.
I'd like to say it started slow. It really didn't. But the first things to go are those flooded spots in the field that we enjoyed so much earlier this year. And then usually it's the smaller ponds, but it seems like it was the flooded stuff in the fields, the smaller ponds, and the big ponds all at once.
Yeah, absolutely. It all goes, you know, hand in hand with the small water. And especially if there's no wind and we have, you know, calm, clear nights, and even worse with a full moon, you know, it really makes things freeze up quick. And even some of the big water will freeze, and it concentrates birds, but a lot of times it'll push most of them out.
We saw that quite a bit, too, when we were between Minnesota and South Dakota the last week. We saw birds heading south. We heard migration reports from down in, you know, Missouri and Arkansas where some different birds. I know some specks were showing up there early, but they're kind of early migrators anyway. They move through quick. Although, we did shoot a speck in South Dakota this week.
Yeah, the first bird that we shot out of our trip was a speckled belly or white front. So that was fun to see. We usually don't see a whole lot of them in Minnesota. So, you know, it's kind of a trophy bird for us.
We're in the truck with Tony Crotty here from Mid-Migration Outfitters on Sporting Journal Radio. So what happens? We had temperatures down kind of in the single digits or at least the low teens in the last week. Now this week coming up looks a little bit better, 40s. But when you get a week and a half of real cold below freezing or right around that freezing mark temperatures, and then it warms up a little bit, maybe some of that water opens back up, but birds might be gone by then.
Yeah, that's just a problem is when it does warm back up and if stuff opens back up, it's good. It's great news, but we just have to hope that we have more birds to the north of us that'll migrate in. And, you know, that's just, you never know what Mother Nature's going to deal you for, you know, a hand. And, you know, it's just stuff that we have to deal with every year.
It is hunting. You always have to remember that. You have to do what you can with what you're given from Mother Nature and also from wild animals, wild birds. You can never guarantee anything. When it gets really cold like that, Tony, when you have colder temperatures out there, you say you're field hunting, whether it's Canada's or mallards or whatever, how do you do things differently? How do you change things up? Sometimes their feeding patterns change when it gets this cold, doesn't it?
Yeah, their patterns get very inconsistent. A lot of times they'll feed at the warmest point of the day. So most times if you look at the weather for the next day and it's going to be a high of 36 degrees, usually that's going to be around mid to late afternoon. And that's, you know, 9 times out of 10 when they're going to fly out is then. Granted, they do throw some curveballs in there now and again, and it always seems to be the days that we don't think that they're going to, but they definitely pattern different than they do early season.
So that right there, which you just explained, is exactly why sometimes late season, it can be so good, but at times it can be so tough because it's cold out there, and their feeding patterns are so inconsistent. Sometimes you're sitting out there all day or most of the day.
Yeah, there's definitely times late season where you're sitting out there just because, you know, usually once they start going, that floodgate opens and you want to be there waiting. So it's tough sometimes. It gets cold and it makes for long days, but most of the time it pays off in the end.
So people listening right now, if they're still trying to get out, you know, while we were in South Dakota, a lot of guys were sending us messages. Where are the birds at? How's the migration going? We got a trip to the Dakotas planned next week, things like that. Where are we at in the migration right now for some of these guys that have things coming up like that?
Well, the Dakotas, North Dakota, I think they're going to be in the heat of it in some places and coming into the tail end. I think South Dakota is right in the middle of it. The problem is lack of water, so that's making things tough, and a lot of birds are pushing over. And then, you know, where we're at in West western Minnesota, I want to say we're probably right in the middle of the migration right now. We got a lot of stuff frozen up, and granted, we still have a lot of scouting to do to figure out exactly where we're at. But we're definitely coming into the later half of the season, and you know, things could keep going good or they could end soon.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. We went to South Dakota for a couple of days early in the week, and it was, I'm not going to say considerably colder in South Dakota than it was in Minnesota, but it was definitely colder over there.
Yeah, there's just something about it over there this time around where everything just seemed colder, and I don't know if it was the wind and just openness or...
But that's the way it goes with South Dakota, because essentially you kind of have to plan a trip, and then we had a three-day license, so once you do plan that trip and you lock in those dates, you're kind of stuck with those 3 days.
You know, we plan the trip out, and usually speaking in South Dakota, the dates that we went out there are actually early. When it comes to, you know, seeing the big push of mallards and snows and Canada's move through, and it just so happens that this year cold weather came through a little earlier, and that's just how it goes.
We're in the truck with Tony Crotty here from Mid-Migration Outfitters on Sporting Journal Radio. I remember a couple of years ago, Tony, I know we've had some early freeze-ups recently, and I remember, gosh, must be 4 years ago, November 7 is when Lac Parle Lake froze over, and I couldn't believe how early that was. And gosh, I mean, it's got to be pretty comparable this year again.
Yeah, I think it is comparable, but the nice part is that I don't think we're going to freeze as hard as we did that year. That year we froze and we didn't open back up. We were ice fishing by late November, and granted, there was times in that year where we were ice fishing in the morning and then going and shooting geese in the afternoon, so it's kind of an odd year. This year, I think, you know, we're going to warm back up. I think stuff will open back up, and we should have at least a couple more weeks of hunting ahead of us.
Yeah, I saw a picture. I don't know if it's legit or not, but I saw a picture midweek of somebody ice fishing out of a portable in North Dakota. I know everybody's joking about it, but, I mean, when we were in South Dakota, we were breaking through 2 inches of ice in places.
Yeah, it froze up pretty hard out there where we were at, and I'm not going to lie, I'll be getting my ice fishing gear ready this week, and I won't be surprised if we'll be out on small ponds ice fishing and then shooting geese again in the afternoon here shortly.
I'd be all right with that, too, and, you know, we did see some pushes of geese move into the area, but the big thing again this year, kind of like last year, too, Tony, is the mallards and the number of mallards we've had moving through this area. It's been kind of fun, kind of frustrating at times because they're mallards, but pretty neat to see these big swarms of mallards around.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been getting big reports of lots of mallards around the refuge since we've been in South Dakota. So it's kind of exciting to come back, and we'll take a peek at the refuge. But I'd be willing to bet you that Minnesota accent right there, willing to bet you.
Yeah.
But I'd be willing to bet that we have more mallards on the refuge than we do geese right now.
I won't say we cut our South Dakota trip short to come back to Minnesota, but we kind of did just because of the reports. And how crazy is that to think about? There's better hunting in Minnesota right now than there is in South Dakota for in some places.
Yeah, that's odd. That's not normal, but we've kind of had a lot of bird numbers in western Minnesota all season long. It's kind of trended that way, so it's not really that surprising, but, you know, 9 years out of 10, we wouldn't be that way.
I don't want to say anything bad about South Dakota, of course. It's the lottery system gets kind of complicated here and there. And for the most part, the locals, we got along with the locals pretty well. But boy, I'll tell you what, and I don't know if it was because the migration was happening so fast, everything was freezing up, that all the local hunters and then also all the out-of-state hunters that had licenses, it's like they all descended upon the same area at the same time. And things got a little wild there.
Yeah, and that's just kind of how it goes. Sometimes everybody sees the migrations in full swing and birds are moving. So, you know, local hunters and out-of-state hunters and everybody is coming out of the woodwork that wants to hunt and get on them birds. And, yeah, it got crazy. You know, we'd be scouting birds and we'd have five other rigs scouting them same birds. And, you know, it's just, that's how the game goes. So we ended up moving out and going to a little less concentrated area and found more bird numbers and, you know, worked with that.
That right there is, you know, again, it comes back to one of the number one biggest pieces of advice that we give when we do this in the truck piece here on the radio show is scouting is just so important. And when you have an area like that where it's so concentrated with, yeah, there's a lot of birds around, and we even had access to some decent land, but there was some land that we couldn't get on that nobody could get on. It was just all locked up. Nobody could hunt it. And essentially, these birds were using those same fields over and over again and going to the same spots. They were safe. It was like refuges
for them. So get out. I mean, there's a there's millions of ducks and geese out there. You don't have to stick to some of those same areas. You can get out and, like we did, go out and find some areas off the beaten path.
Absolutely. Yeah, we left that main migration area and we kind of went off the edge of it into an area that most people probably wouldn't think about hunting on a normal basis, and we ended up finding a big concentration of birds. But with that 3-day license, we were kind of limited in timing and getting them patterned and you know, getting them figured out. So, but if we would have had a little more time, I think we could have got on some real good hunts.
MidmigrationOutfitters.com has more information. You can see pictures and videos there too from the fall or from the spring snow goose hunts. This has been In the Truck with Tony Crotty from Midmigration Outfitters. Tony, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskie. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
All right, we're back. Sporting Journal Radio. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio network. On demand at sportingjournalradio.com or subscribable and podcastable in your iTunes. I'm Brett Amundson, and we can't go the whole show without talking about whitetails, because holy man, have I been seeing some big deer get shot finally here in Minnesota. I mean, that whole bow season, it seems like there was only a couple of really nice deer that I saw come through my social media feeds, and now the gun season's open. There's been some real nice deer taken here in Minnesota, and I even saw a real nice deer taken in Iowa by our next guest. Tyler Scott joins us here once again on the radio show to talk about deer. Tyler, you made the trip to Iowa this year.
We did. You know, it's been a long time coming. Been in the works for the last 5-6 years, and we finally had the points to draw, and the three of us, we drew our tags, and we kind of had, you know, high expectations and a lot of anticipation leading into the hunt, and it was everything we asked for.
Yeah, you guys all shot nice deer, right?
Yeah, we did. You know, fortunately enough, one of my good friends, his uncle is a land manager down in Iowa, and we were able to get on a large farm just to ourselves, and the deer activity was something I've never seen in my life. Probably won't see until I go back to that farm again.
So
just the vast number of deer and the rut activity, and it was wild.
How big were the three deer?
You know, these weren't any giants. These were all just respectable deer. You know, all 5x5s. Mine was, you know, in that 150 class, and the other two were right around 140. So again, no giants, but just nice, respectable deer.
Those are nice deer, definitely. And just briefly, tell us about the process of being a non-resident and deer hunting in Iowa. How does that work? Mm-hmm.
So the unit we were in, it requires you to have 2 points and you draw on your third. So each spring, typically I think it's right around that first week in May, all the way to about the 1st of June, you are able to buy your point. And like I said, our unit was 2 points and then draw on your third year. The popular units in southern Iowa, I believe it's like 5 and 6. I think they're getting upwards of needing like 4 points or 5 points and drawn on your 5th or your 6th year.
Wow.
And so, I mean, Iowa DNR has done it right in my mind in limiting the amount of archery tags given out. It shows in their quality, and moving that gun season back into December. And allowing the archery hunters to have at the deer in the rut, it makes for an exciting hunt. That is for sure.
A lot of people talk about that Minnesota's gun season is too early. Do you feel that's true?
I mean, that's a debate that people could go around and around on. Me as a passionate bow hunter and loving to see deer, what deer do best without the pressure of human invasion. You know, the Orange Army of Minnesota and shoot Wisconsin and many other states, you know, hits the woods full bore right when the deer are cranking up.
Right.
So unfortunately for a lot of hunters in Minnesota, gun hunters, it's the only weekend they hunt or two weekends that they hunt out of the year. And so it's a mad rush of individuals hitting the woods, hitting the prairie, wherever. And deer feel that pressure within the first few hours, it seems like. And so unfortunately, the majority of people don't get to see deer, again, like I say, do what they do best during daylight activity. I think a lot of it's done under the cover of night, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I do like bow hunting so much, is because you get to see deer in their natural environment, which is generally I like to try to bow hunt before the gun season starts, because mm-hmm. then they're kind of, you know, the gun season is a giant meat hunt, although I've seen some really nice deer taken with guns this year, but they're kind of running for their lives most of the time. And then, then it gets real tough for the bow hunters and the guys with muzzle loaders after that, because there's a lot of deer go nocturnal at that point. But so moving the gun season back a little bit. And then what else say the Minnesota DNR is listening to the show right now, 'cause they love my show, of course. Say they're listening right now. What could they learn from Iowa? What do you think that Iowa does that Minnesota doesn't, that maybe Minnesota should do?
Well, as like we talked about, and again, this is very biased coming from two bow hunters, and so I don't want to upset the passionate rifle hunters, because
sure,
there
sure.
definitely is a very large crowd of passionate rifle hunters. But moving the gun season back now, whether it be starting over Thanksgiving weekend, you know, Iowa's back into December, like the first weekend in December is their first weekend of gun hunting. You know, so that takes those deer that are now out of, for sure, their first cycle, the first ester cycle. So that's a majority of the does are going to get bred. And during that time period, those big mature bucks are up on their feet when they probably shouldn't be, or as for long during the daytime hours as they should be. And so that's where a lot of these deer are getting, you know, harvested during the gun season in Minnesota. So Iowa pushes it back. A lot of those deer are saved because they aren't running around recklessly during the rut with a bunch of guns out there.
Sure.
Another thing I think Minnesota could do, you know, to help limit the number of people, it's a numbers game, comes down to the almighty dollar at the end of the day too. But Iowa, for you to go down there and archery hunt, it's about a $600 tag.
Yeah.
And so that's going to eliminate a lot of people right there in itself. And the gun tag is virtually the same price too. And so when you talk about a non-resident spending $500-$600 on a deer tag, that eliminates a lot of people versus, I believe, our non-resident tag, and this is just a rough guess, but it's probably around $140.
Yeah, I think it is somewhere in there. But let me ask you this, because I don't disagree with those points, but from the DNR standpoint, you're right. There's, what, 500,000 gun hunters out there in the state of Minnesota, mm-hmm. and they have their every right to do what they get to do. And I haven't gun hunted in Minnesota. I used to gun hunt in Wisconsin all the time, and we always used to ask this question about gun hunting in Wisconsin, because it's a 9-day season around Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we always talked about, geez, can you maybe extend the season in Wisconsin? Can you move it one way or the other? You know, because North Dakota's earlier, Minnesota's earlier, should it be later, whatever? And, you know, I've asked this question to the Wisconsin DNR and the Minnesota DNR, the amount of legwork it would take to move the season and just how many people you would upset because mm-hmm. of tradition with deer mm-hmm. camp and things like that. Do you think it'd be yep. feasible for them to do it?
Oh, that is a million-dollar question. Like you say, tradition plays a huge part in doing that. And it would probably upset more people than it would benefit, unfortunately. And that's just a biased statement. There's no truth behind that, but it would be a logistical nightmare
yeah.
for the DNR to move it. Because yep. as long as I've known, you've probably known, Minnesota Rifles typically opens up that first weekend in November.
Right. Yeah. So let me ask you this. What about creating some zones where they, you know, maybe they've got some areas like, say, the Southeast, which seems to be more open to some of the more, restrictive regulations, whether it's APR or some different dates on different seasons, things like that. Maybe they could do it by zone where they move some of the gun seasons back and you know, maybe it would lessen the blow just a little bit. But let me ask you this, because we're kind of running out of time here. Tyler Scott joining us here on Sporting Journal Radio talking whitetails. What about the habitat in Iowa? Is there anything that they do down there for conserving and creating more habitat versus Minnesota?
You know, they've got that special minerals in their dirt down there that seems like everything grows bigger, taller, more nutritious for those deer. And when we're down there in September setting stands, the amount of mass being acorns, walnuts, apples on this farm, you know, honey locusts is insane. No, we can't. There's nothing we can do about that. That's just their natural habitat. But on the way home from Iowa, I did see a lot of restoration programs along the road. I think they're big into the CREP program down there. And creating and maintaining habitat is very important. Of course, with agricultural expansions these days and taking out of those lands, it makes it hard. It's a hard battle to fight, too, with the private landowners in that sense. But overall, their management of their habitat, what habitat remains, is phenomenal. And I would never argue against someone telling me that Minnesota's habitat is better than Iowa's, because Iowa's is far superior to what ours is, I believe.
And with the new farm bill, hopefully we can get our numbers of CRP acreage back up, and we got some rates that are competitive with the commodity prices coming down a little bit. So hopefully we can get some more grass on the ground. And of course, you're heavily involved with quality deer management with Heart of Lakes up there. You know, is there a lot of quality deer management in Iowa?
Yes. I think it's a mindset probably ingrained when these kids are born. This has been ingrained in a long time for generations long before us, that it's all about shooting a quality animal versus just brown it's down, you know, the mentality of a lot of deer hunters in Minnesota, which there's nothing wrong with that, because again, it's a tradition.
Well, and they like to eat it, you know, so that guy that wants to eat it and he doesn't have many options because of whatever herd size is down or habitat is down or whatever, and he sees a spike or a fork or something come through and he wants to eat venison for the next few months. It's hard to fault that guy for it.
It is, for sure. Yep.
But man, it's like moving mountains. You know, you're right. It absolutely is a mindset for that. So we got about a little over a minute left here with Tyler Scott. Give us just a quick summary. What's going on with Heart of Lakes? Anything new up there? What can people do to help manage for deer on their property? If you had one piece of advice for them.
You know, just judging from what we have around home, it seems like there's a mentality of, I got to shoot a buck. I can't not tag something this year. There's nothing wrong with shooting a doe. I get just as much of enjoyment. I get just as shook when I know I'm going to shoot a doe that's coming in versus a big mature deer. There's nothing wrong with taking a doe. And right now, our buck to doe ratio is so out of whack. And there's nothing wrong with taking a doe. So if I have one idea or one request, it would just, you know, be happy with shooting a doe, because there is nothing wrong with shooting a doe these days. They taste great.
They're delicious.
It helps the herd. It really does.
That's right. All right, man. Well, congratulations on your buck in Iowa. Did you fill your Minnesota tag yet?
Still working on it.
All right. Well, I still need to buy mine. So I'm working on mine too, but good luck with that. Tyler Scott, thanks for being on Sporting Journal Radio.
Thanks, Brett.
Also, thanks to Tony Crotty and Joe Henry, and thanks to you for listening to Sporting Journal Radio. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, on the Sporting Journal Radio Network. To listen to this show again, get the latest hunting and fishing news and more, visit sportingjournalradio.com.